during the 20th century in war reports from Lebanon during the Civil War, you might have heard mention of the Druze, and perhaps in the context of Druze militia even. Well, though they're still aloof in Syria, as it seems to be erupting into civil war, there may be as many as 700,000 Druze there in Syria. And if you've never been able to make sense of Middle Eastern politics, well, welcome to the club. But the excellent news is that one part of the Middle East puzzle will likely become a little bit clearer in this, the first of two episodes on the Druze good life, with me, Noel Debien, on ABC Radio and on your pod. The esoteric Druze sect came out of Shia Islam about 1,000 years ago. Some scholars say that they absorbed ideas from Sufism, from Greek philosophy, and from Gnosticism. Things like the word logos and the universal mind. Getting themselves disowned by many Muslims, in fact. And they also definitely believe in reincarnation, which is certainly not your run-of-the-mill Muslim. Though their religion shows great reverence for some of the Christian prophets, they came to fame first during the Crusades. Their fierce troops were very effective in defeating the Christian Crusaders. They permit no conversion to their faith, and they do not permit marriage with non-Druzes. Their teaching also allows them a concession to deny their faith in times of persecution. This custom called taqiyya is concealing or disguising their beliefs when necessary. Well, their believers are in two distinct ranks, the enlightened and the unenlightened. And historically, their often persecuted beliefs have been cloaked in deep secrecy. But the Druze are being startlingly open these days as they settle into free societies like here in Australia, where they're not persecuted, where they have nothing to fear. We have thousands of Druze living here in Australia. The last census said 3,000. It's likely to be many more now. And only recently, news reports told of an Adelaide arsonist who burnt down the Druze meeting hall there, devastating Druze Australians in Adelaide.
Hello, my name is Arif Biani. I've written a book called A Tawheed Sect, History and Doctrine, an Introduction to My Fellowship, Muwahideen Druze. A Tawheed means Unitarian, a Muwahidun, this is a Unitarian Druze.
So you would call yourself Unitarian if you were using English. That's what the Druze call themselves.
Yes, the book is purposely addressed to our people first and for other people who are interested in reading about our history and doctrine.
And your own name for yourself, the Muwahidun, means the people of the Tawheed, the people of the Unitarian faith.
Yeah. You see, we are called by three names, Muslim monotheists, Muwahideen Druze, and we call Bani Ma'ruf, the people of knowledge, good and patience.
And you believe yourself to be Muslims, to be part of the Islamic
definitely, 100%,
faith?
Yes, definitely, 100%. Every Unitarian Druze is required to know Almighty Allah in addition to the beautiful names and sacred qualities that are mentioned in Quran by the following four conditions which are the backbones of our Unitarian theology. One, to know that He, blessed be His name, is the most capable and the most perfect. Two, to make Him, blessed be His name, infallible of all statements and actions. Three, to know that He, blessed be His name, has exclusive possession of greatness and majesty. And four, to confess of our inability to reach His knowledge in any case. So this is the four conditions, and every Unitarian Druze must believe and follow these four conditions.
In that sense, this is defining very carefully that Tawheed means Unitarian, it means belief in one God.
That's right.
And that the Muwahidun, the Druze, are these people who believe in one God who cannot be understood, cannot be described, is above all other things.
Yes.
When you are a Druze, is worship like a mosque? Is it like meeting together, or is it something different?
If you read our history, it was a decree after we had a lot of hardship to practice our prayers at home.
Mm-hmm.
During the Ottoman reign.
Under the Turks.
Yeah, we had a lot of massacres from them. And so it was a decree. Nobody collectively, nobody can go to one place. Everybody has to pray at home. And one becomes a pattern, people don't like to change. But some people do, some people don't. In every religion, people pray, people don't pray. People fast, people don't fast. The world now is different than before because freedom is more.
Where do most Druze live?
I can classify it in two eras, no? One before Islam and one after Islam. Mm-hmm. So before Islam, there were Arabic origin. So most of the Druze Unitarian ancestry before Islam descends from well-known and deep-rooted Arabic tribes.
Now, this is supported by modern genetic research that says that the Druze oral tradition of this is being shown likely to be true from the study of your own genes.
Yeah. For me, this is the history and this is the tree. If you look at page 18 of my book, this is the origin of our sect.
And this is out of Shia Islam, the seveners of Shia Islam.
Yeah, this is when we're talking about the second era, which is Islam. So Unitarian Druze also believe that the first Islamic ancestors after the rise of Islam were the true followers of the first Islamic school, which was established during the time of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi. So the origin of Unitarian Druze is from the Fatimid, from the seven Shiites.
Now, there are some Muslims who say the Druze are not Muslims. What do you say to them?
Well, everybody has own privilege to say whatever he wants. We believe what we are. We are happy what we are. If people don't agree, it's up to them. It's their privilege. We have no problem with other people, what they think.
Now, Arif, I was very happy to find you because when I read the news reports only, you know, a short while ago about the terrible fire that happened in Adelaide that burnt down the meeting house of the Druze in Adelaide, I hadn't known before that there were Druze in Australia, yet there are actually quite a lot of you, aren't there?
Yeah. The migration of the Druze community to Australia started from Lebanon.
More than a century ago.
Yeah, at the end of 19th century, I would say between 1870 or 1890, something like that. Particularly to South Australia and Western Australia. There were World War I and World War II, and there were a lot of unemployment and famine in Lebanon. And more migrant Druze started to come to Australia and to Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, and settle in Australia where job opportunities are available. South Australia, Western Australia, Victoria, New South Wales.
There's more than 10,000 of you here. At least 10,000, I think.
Yeah, definitely more than 10,000. And they are coming from Lebanon, Syria, Jordan and Palestine now.
Which is where the Druze mainly live. From what I could find on the internet, it said maybe half the Druze live in Syria, another 30 to 40% in Lebanon, 6 or 7% in Israel, 2% in Jordan maybe, and there's more than a million of you worldwide.
I think roughly right,
The Druze are known for fitting in when they emigrate, even almost, I suppose, to fly under the radar, to be cautious when they come into a culture.
To be cautious because we have been subjected to many hardships, massacres, especially during the Ottoman regime. We have lost thousands and thousands and thousands of people. But now we are happy to mention we are what we are, what's our origin and what we believe in, and we have nothing to hide.
I read that you become a Druze only by being the child of a Druze. You can't join the faith. It doesn't try to convert people and hasn't for 1,000 years. Now, that means that over the long history of the Druze, genetic research shows that there is a very identifiable group of people. You don't just mix up all over the place like, say, Americans or Australians do. You're more like the Jews in that you would marry within the faith.
To become a Druze, you have to be a religious person, right?
Yes.
And if it's hard for our people, it's going to be harder for other people to join us. I know our people and how they behave, the youth and even the old people now, who tried and failed to continue with this path. Because there are a lot of obligations, I would say it was impossible for other people to join us.
In a sense, you're talking about the Druze, the Unitarians, now becoming more open because they're safer. And even you and I talking now, 100 years ago, would not have been possible, really. You would have been more cautious of the safety of your people.
When we talk about values and ethics and the social upbringing, you see that we were precautious and conservative.
Well, let's talk about that now. The main ethical teachings of the Druze, they're in sort of two groups, religious upbringing and social upbringing. Yeah. Tell us about religious upbringing first.
It's based on Druze Unitarian doctrine and has influenced Unitarian Druze to enjoin what is right and forbid what's wrong, to be pious, faithful, righteous, truthful, bright, open-minded, patient, good-hearted, trustworthy, tolerant, humanitarian, peaceful, just, and precautious and conservative at the same time.
Cautious and conservative.
Yes.
You don't drink alcohol or smoke?
Yeah, and now, you know, the young people, you know, like to enjoy life, so they drink, although it is not permissible in our religion, as in all other Islamic groups. But what can you do? So
I think
you try to preach them, to guide them, and hopefully they listen.
I think many religious leaders have the same problem.
Yeah, we have problem with that nowadays.
But you also forbid smoking, for example, and gambling as well.
Yeah. Because when I talk about halal and haram...
Halal means permissible, yeah. Haram means forbidden.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the source, it has to be halal. So if you gamble, the source is not halal because you didn't earn it by yourself. You have to work for the money to be halal. You get interest from the bank. It's not right. We don't consider it right. It's illegal.
You wouldn't eat pork, for example, either.
Definitely.
There's one other thing you mentioned in your book about religious upbringing. To make peace only when honour, religion and freedom are preserved, and to resist and fight unjust leaders. That's very interesting.
Yes. I'm talking now history also.
Yes.
So when we had our rulers, I'm not talking about today, mm-hmm. When we had our self-rules, if the ruler is unjust, they will not accept him. He has to step down, and we need to bring a just and fair ruler. And always in our sect, there will be two leadership, one religious leader and one political leader.
Oh.
And always the religious leader has the upper hand. When they put a decree, you are off your post, that's it, you are off the post.
So among the Druze, the religious leader has the upper hand always and will command political authority.
Yeah. Spiritual people, mm-hmm. then you feel comfortable with them, you feel at ease with them, you feel happy when you sit with them, listen to what their advice, their guidance.
I want to talk to you a little bit more about religious leaders in a minute, but just staying on those ethical teachings of the Druze.
Yeah.
When I read that one principle of the religious upbringing is to make peace only when honour, religion and freedom are preserved, even historically when we're talking about the past centuries, it sounds to me like the Druze are not a pushover, that the Druze are not necessarily pacifists.
The Druze will fight for the sake of God. They fought with their brother Muslims all the time. There is a case for God, they would never hesitate to fight. We follow the Quran. Any other causes, we are very peaceful. You know that we are the pioneer in applying religious and social inclusive practices because we are peaceful at the same time, sociable, very comfortable with all the religions because we believe God ordained to have many religions in earth. That means we accept that fact.
Well, I do want to ask you a direct question because in your book you write also that on the ethical teaching of the Druze, when you talk about social upbringing, you
yes.
talk about honouring guests, respecting the religion of others, their beliefs
yes,
and
yes,
opinions.
Yes, we respect highly because we know for a fact if God wants one religion, he would have one religion at earth. That's why you have to accept this fact and to live with it and to deal with it in the positive way, in a supportive way.
Now, you also teach in social upbringing among the Druze that you must please neighbours, safeguard refugees.
Yes.
Now, also avoiding flashiness and indecency
yes,
with moderation in attire.
Yeah. If you look at the Druze before, I'm not talking about only now.
You're talking about the Druze through history.
Through their history, yes.
Now, your book also mentions the two types of Druze membership, the wise mind-driven people. I think you call them in Arabic the Al-Uqal.
Our society is divided into two sections.
Two sections.
Al-Uqal, that means the religious people who are aware. Not only they know the things, they have to behave according to what they know. For the other non-religious people, they have the same faith, but they don't have the same worship and the same practices and the same knowledge as the section of Uqal.
So the Al-Uqal are like 1 in 20 Druze would be one of the Al-Uqal. These are people who really deeply understand the mysteries of a Unitarianism and who live it perfectly.
They will not be considered Uqal unless they have the knowledge and the application in a way that pleases God.
And then on the other hand, most Druze would be what is translated as Al-Juhal, which are the uninformed, the life-driven
uninformed,
people.
Yes, that means people from their nature are not ready. When they are ready, they will follow. You need to have mature mind. This is very hard for people who are still interested in life, They want still to enjoy life. They are not ready yet. Religious people would not encourage them unless they are ready. They have to test them.
If there is a group who are recognized as the al-ukal, these are like the knowledgeable ones, the specialist Druze who really have deeply imbibed the religion and show it by example. And if there's a larger group who are called the al-juhal, those who are not living it the way they know it to be.
They're not practicing the way the religious people are practicing.
How can you tell the difference? Is it obvious to watch how they live or how they dress?
Yes. The transition to go from one stage to another, from 3 months to 1 year. Somebody has to examine you to see how you conduct yourself, to see that you are fulfilling the requirement. Some people stay for 2 years, 3 years, and they said they cannot pursue that course or that path anymore.
If I understand properly, you're saying that you can be from the al-juhal, the less informed, the less perfect, as it were. You can try to become initiated into those who are the knowledgeable initiates, the al-ukal, and you might fail. Even you might be there for 2 years, but you can come back to being sort of an ordinary Druze.
If you think about your life, not the hereafter, you're going to fail because it's tough. It's not simple.
The ukal, the knowledgeable initiates, they have to be quite strict. They have ascetical practices, almost like monks and nuns almost.
Yes. You can clearly say that. You can clearly say that.
And so that only maybe one in five Druze would ever get to this status of religious practice.
Maybe within 10 years, the rates of ukal goes tremendously high, and the rate of juhal goes down, and in another area you go a different way.
Oh, it can change.
It depends the circumstances of life, if there is a hardship on life. So that's why you have a lot of people now trying to go to this class, to a cult class, like what happened during our civil war in Lebanon. You see a lot of people from our sect that starting to go for the classification of cult.